Welcome into the latest edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and looking forward to getting you up to speed on all the biggest stories in the NFL as we kick off Week 14. We will review a wild one at Arrowhead last night where the Chiefs took control of the AFC West by taking care of the previously red-hot Raiders. A pretty bad night for Oakland and Derek Carr and Jack Del Rio. We'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. We also have some good Way We Hear It stories this week discussing what's happening in Houston with Brock Osweiler and the buyer's remorse going on there. Also, we'll hit on what's happening in Chicago with the Bears and a quarrel between Vic Fangio and John Fox. In addition to that, we'll talk all the best games in Week 14 and get you up to speed on a lot of other stuff as well. Joined by Hub Arkish, as I am each week, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. Yes, he is also my father. Hub will join us here in just a moment, but before he does, I want to let you know about our great sponsor, Loot Crate. On a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than 20 bucks a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. They are always watching. They've designed a system to keep you down. They are meddlesome. Hello, friends. It's time for a revolution. Fight the power and pave the way for a brighter tomorrow with December's Rebellious Crate, featuring exclusive items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop figure, our monthly t-shirt and pin. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that last month's crate, and when the cutoff happens, that's it, it's over. Make sure to head to www.lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter the code SHAW to save $3 off any new subscription today. Thank you to Loot Crate. One more time, that promo code SHAW, SHAW. All right, without further ado, let's bring in Hub Arkish to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast and see what's happening with him.
Hello, Arthur. How you doing?
This is our guy, Hub Arkish. You guys know him well, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. And, Hub, I'm doing great. How are you on this fine Friday morning?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Outstanding. How much of the Thursday night action did you get to take in? And is there anything that we can chalk up Derek Carr's woeful performance to besides there's more trouble with that pinky than he's leading on?
Well, yeah, I mean, two weeks in a row, decent Thursday night football games. It's ironic. It comes after the news that they're most likely going away. I think it's still thankful if they go away. I think it's a bad idea, but it was nice to get another good game.
Yeah.
I woke up this morning chanting Tyreek, Tyreek, Tyreek. and so obviously that's exciting. I think it's pretty clear with Derek Carr that finger's got to be bothering him. It shouldn't be a major issue. It is not when the quarterback throws a pressure point on the football, but nonetheless, my understanding is it was dislocated in two places. It's tremendously painful. It just happened a few days ago, and so it's going to probably take another week or two, I would think, to be able to fully overcome the effects of it.
Hub, I know you're a busy man, running all over the place per usual, probably heading to Hallis Hall or maybe leaving there at this point, so I don't know if you have caught wind of the theory that's making its way around the interwebs. What did you think of that bizarre looking deep ball that seemed to change flight midair, third down, fourth quarter, Raiders trailing by one score, and it looks like they are about to have a chance to tie it up after a long touchdown with the two-point conversion. Derek Carr, one of his better throws of the night, seemingly. Again, it's hard to say on the podcast. You need to see the video. Amari Cooper is one of the best deep ball trackers in the game, and for him to look so out of sorts, long-winded question. There's a theory going around that football may have hit the NBC spider cam over the top of the field, obviously. What do you think about that?
Well, it's a theory. I don't spend a lot of time, to be honest with you, on the interweb and conspiracy theories and things like that. It's a strange.
It was weird
play.
Looking, was it not? It was very odd.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it was also difficult conditions out there.
Right.
It could be as simple as a gust of wind. It can be a lot of things. It could have been the rotation on the ball. It could have hit one of those very fine wires. I mean, as you know, I worked the sidelines on those radio broadcasts on the national radio for Westwood One, and I watch them often as that camera moves around, and I wonder about it. But I think the point would be, regardless of what it was, that's part of the playing field now, you know, and it's no different from any other potential obstruction. And it was what it was. There's no guarantee that that Cooper catches it, that they get two, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's one play. I'm sure, again, the conspiracy theorists will have fun with it, but I don't really think there's anything more worth making out of it, to be honest with you.
Sure, and obviously a bad night overall for Derek Carr. You know, I think the front runner likely for the MVP award heading into Week 14. I don't think he is anymore after an outing like that. It was also a bad night for Jack Del Rio, I thought. The maybe the front runner for Coach of the Year. He's certainly in the conversation. For him, his defense to get beat over the top routinely by Alex Smith of all quarterbacks. And Hub, I'm going to give you a chance to praise Alex Smith. I know you have been at the front of the list and thinking he's one of the NFL's more underrated players. And he was flat out outstanding early in that ball game before a rough second half. But for Carr's, or for Smith to beat that Raiders defense deep the way he did, and then for some of the questionable play calling late in the game from Oakland, I didn't think it was a good look for either of those two leading figures for Oakland. And tell me if you disagree, but I do want to talk about the Chiefs too, and about Alex Smith and about Tyreek Hill. Do you see any Devin Hester? Dave Tobe has made the comparison. How much does he change that team, and how much does Alex Smith give them? I mean, he seems to be perennially underrated, but that was a big time performance when they needed it, at least to build that early lead last night.
Well, let's unpack. I mean, there's, I guess, four different questions in there.
I'm good at that. Sorry.
Yeah, well, let's see if I can get them in order. I think Jack Del Rio's had a really nice year. Jim Caldwell's already got my vote for Coach of the Year, so, but Del Rio has done a great job as well. And I don't think, you know, it's both the question of Del Rio's evening and as far as Derek Carr's night. I was early to that party. I wrote a column about a month ago that I thought that he might be the front runner for the MVP. So I don't think you lose it after one night, a Thursday night on short preparation with your quarterback playing hurt. They're still 10-3. They're still one of the great stories in the NFL this year. It was a bad night. So I do think that there was some questionable decisions made in the second half. The play calling, as you point out, A, I think that's more Bill Musgrave than it is Del Rio, and B, your quarterback's hurt. He can't go under center. You're playing the night in the shotgun. You know, so there's a lot of stuff that you can put into that. I would not downgrade either Del Rio or Derek Carr too much for what happened last night. Let's see how they finish out the season, and assuming they get there, what they do in the playoffs. You flip it around, you look at Kansas City. Alex Smith is not an elite quarterback. He'll never be an elite passer. We know that. All he does is win, and he's a guy I want on my team. I know that. And you look at Andy Reid's record with him in Kansas City, you know, it's the best record in football in the regular season. They did win a playoff game last year, and then they had the impossible task of going to Foxborough. So, you know, I think what you saw last night was kind of vintage Alex Smith. He'll put you in a position to win, and he rarely will be the reason that you lose. As far as Tyreek Hill, just an exciting, exciting kid. He did have some problems off the field in college. One of the reasons that he was not a higher-ranked prospect coming out of school in Oklahoma. So, you know, I think that you keep an eye on and you hope that's in his past. Dave Tobe is actually an old friend. We're based in Chicago, and, of course, Dave was here for 9 years during the Lovie Smith years. I think he's one of the best special teams coaches, if not the best special teams coach in football. And I didn't talk to him myself about this, but I saw a quote from him about 2 weeks ago where he thought that Tyreek Hill might have as high or even a higher ceiling as Devin Hester. And Dave Tobe is the guy who created Devin Hester. Well, Devin Hester, you know, was created elsewhere, obviously, but Dave Tobe is the guy who made him a great NFL player, possibly even a Hall of Famer. And, you know, for him to give that kind of praise to Hill, I think we got to take that seriously.
Yeah, pretty awesome stuff. Devin Hester as a rookie with the Bears in 2006 had 6 total touchdowns, all on returns, of course. Tyreek Hill is up to 8. The difference is that Tyreek Hill has become a game changer for that offense in addition to what he's doing in the return game. And Hub mentioned his ugly backstory. It is the reason he was available. It was the reason that he was very controversial pick by John Dorsey and Andy Reid. He had an ugly domestic assault arrest in his past, and hopefully he has turned over a new leaf right now. It's been very cool to watch, and just a very, very special talent. He might be the fastest player in the NFL. I believe I read last night, Hub, that he is the first rookie in NFL history with a receiving touchdown, a rushing touchdown, and both a punt return and a kick return. That's one primetime game after, you know, reaching Gale Sayers' record, doing it all in a season, too. So just amazing stuff with the Chiefs. But there's a big caveat here, Hub, and this is what I want to talk about next. It seems like there is a fatal flaw with most of these playoff teams, and it's injuries. Just your thoughts on losing Derek Johnson, what he means to that team, and his second ruptured Achilles in 3 years. Just, I'd have to think, a devastating blow for the Chiefs, even though Ramique Wilson came in and played excellent in Johnson's absence last night.
Yeah, a real quick thought to finish on Hill. I have not heard that stat you just quoted, and I know we throw him around. Yeah, Gale Sayers had 22 touchdowns as a rookie, and I could have sworn that he had both kickoff and punt returns. I know he had punt returns, and obviously he had them receiving and catching, so we'll double-check that one.
I'll look on that. Yep. Talk to me about Derek Johnson. How big of a blow is that?
It's a huge loss. I mean, he's the spiritual leader of that defense. He is the figurative leader of that defense from the middle linebacker spot. At 34, I believe, he was having a fantastic year. Remember, he had to come back from knee surgery a couple of years ago. And it's going to be hard to overcome. I guess the one piece of good news is just in the last couple of weeks, they seem to have gotten back a fully loaded Justin Houston. You know, and so obviously you wanted to have both. It is going to be significant. And we're going to have to just see now, because Derek Johnson rarely comes off the field, we don't know much about what's behind him, but right. That will definitely be something to watch in with the Chiefs in the next couple of weeks leading up to the playoffs.
And it seems like just the latest, and quickly, I am looking on Gale Sayers' NFL.com page now, Hub. He did have both a punt, kick return, and obviously receiving six receiving touchdowns, but he didn't find the end zone as a – well, no, obviously he did as a rusher a bunch of times too, so – never mind. I'm taking that back. It looks like he did do it. It would be Tyreek Hill chasing Gale Sayers for the second time in 3 weeks on a record that had been standing for 50 plus years. So impressive stuff nonetheless. But Hub, Earl Thomas goes down for the Seahawks. Rob Gronkowski obviously for the Patriots. Jason Pierre-Paul for the Giants. Jake Matthews and Julio Jones ailing right now for the Falcons. How much are injuries throwing a wrench in all the best teams? And I don't know if the Falcons and the Giants belong in that conversation, but certainly the other three teams. Who do you think is impacted the most by losing these really just central figures on these clubs?
Well, record-wise, the Giants do fall in that conversation, and I think they may be impacted the most because, as you just alluded to, they're probably not of the quality of these other teams. And to suffer a loss like JPP, who was really just starting to play his best football. He's been good all year, but he was beginning to get the concept of how to overcome that injured hand. He had three sacks a couple weeks ago, so I think that is a huge loss. And I think the loss of Earl Thomas has got to be huge to the Seattle Seahawks. I know they've got other playmakers on that defense, but I've maintained for a long time that he was the bigger difference maker than Richard Sherman. And so they're still a good football team. They're still a good defense. But now when you talk about the second round of the playoffs and conference title games, I think you're going to see that loss felt. You know, probably, and it should be no surprise to anybody, the team in the best position to withstand it, even though Gronk is, I think, maybe the greatest tight end to ever play the game. They got Marty Bennett there, who's been to a Pro Bowl, and he's that rare guy that both is a great run blocker and pass catcher. That's why they brought him in there. He's been behaving. He had been banged up. He's getting healthier. Now, what they wanted is to be able to line up the two of them, and they're going to miss that. But, you know, they get Deion Lewis back, who's a weapon that Brady likes a lot. So it's a big loss. But when you talk about these key injuries, I'm guessing that the Patriots may be in the best position to withstand it.
Yeah, and you throw in, obviously, you know, Chris Hogan and Malcolm Mitchell playing a lot better now, and they still have Julian Edelman, of course. So it's not that they're longing for weapons, and at the same time, there may not be anyone more imaginative than Josh McDaniels to be able to – I mean, gosh, we've seen him rework his scheme on the fly before. So I do tend to agree with you, but it is staggering when you look at those numbers, and I didn't even realize them until they were in front of me, just how much the Patriots miss Rob Gronkowski, particularly in the playoffs. Playoffs in years past where his injuries have really kind of derailed them. So we'll see what happens, and it'll be interesting to follow because, you know, aside from the Cowboys, really, you can't really find a team at this point that seems really healthy as far as the top teams go at this point, can you?
No, and that's not, unfortunately, unusual in the NFL today.
Right.
It's just becoming more and more difficult to keep everybody on the field. I think we also know that one of the things you look at come playoff time is who is the healthiest, and that's why, you know, I think in addition to the great performance they've had all year, because I think the Cowboys are a flawed football team. I know they're, you know, 11-1, and I give them credit for everything they've accomplished. They are the favorite in the NFC right now. They should be the favorite in the NFC. I'm not trying to criticize them, but when you break them down unit by unit, they are clearly flawed in some ways, you know, and so I think the fact that they're also seemingly the healthiest right now is one more argument in why you can overlook those flaws and say, you know, pretty clearly that they're the best team in not just the NFC, but the NFL right now.
It sounds, Hub, like Jerry Jones is considering trying to get Tony Romo an opportunity to knock some rust off if the Cowboys keep rolling as the season comes closer to its conclusion. Is that one of those things where you would not mess with it if it isn't broken, or can you see the value in trying to get Romo in some game situations just to prepare for kind of a catastrophic situation for Dallas down the road?
You know, Arthur, I wouldn't do most of the things that Jerry Jones does because he's not the coach. He's the owner, and he's not a football guy in spite of the fact that he thinks he is. So,
right.
I know he likes the sound of his own voice. You know, and let me be fair to Jerry Jones. He's probably echoing either something Jason Garrett has said or at least the conversation he's had with him. But it's a shame because this team, you know, they should be hearing nothing but positives now, and then you got the owner meddling in this stuff. I guess Garrett's gotten used to it. You certainly wouldn't even be thinking about it until you've clinched everything there is to clinch. And actually, I guess they could do that this week. And so, you know, if they lock up the number one seed this week, then I would not sit Dak Prescott down, but I'd consider giving Tony Romo a second half. You know, let him get out on the football field. That certainly makes some sense. You know, first you make sure that you've clinched everything you can, and they've got a little more work to do before they start talking about doing things that might be good but could also cause a problem when you don't really need any problems right now.
Hub, I didn't have this in my notes, but I know how much you love talking about Jerry Jones. Is he the executive of the year right now for the second time in the past three seasons?
I mean, you know, how do you decide on that award? What did Jerry Jones do? You know, I mean, Stephen Jones is actually the director of player personnel, and so if you want to credit somebody, because what we're really talking about is they drafted Zeke Elliott and Dak Prescott.
Right.
And anything else, do you win that award for two draft picks? That said, I look around the league, you know, I'm not so sure that Reggie McKenzie isn't the executive of the year. You know,
Yep. You
look at what's happening there. You can't really say in the first year, but maybe Quinn in Detroit. I don't know. You know, there's other guys. My guess is that Jones will get it because he'll talk his way into it. But has he done a great job as an executive? I can't really say.
Yeah, I'd have no problem with Reggie McKenzie either, the way that he, you know, obviously has had another productive draft and even more so the free agency this time around to build around the nucleus that he created through the draft. So just spending a couple more minutes with Hub Arkus, we're not really going to go through all the intriguing games of Week 14. It's a full slate, and I know your time is limited. I want to get to a couple primetime games before I let you go. But before we do that, you had a couple interesting Way We Hear It pieces this week we need to hit on. What's the latest on Brock Osweiler and maybe the issues he's having not really being limited to what he's doing on the football field where he's been just short of awful?
Well, we've been getting reports for a while, and we finally dug in last week, and we're hearing from a number of sources that it turns out now that John Elway apparently was not at all disappointed to see Brock Osweiler leave Denver. You know, the narrative is that Houston surprised him with a big contract offer, and according to our sources, Elway was concerned about what he saw as a little bit of a me-first attitude, maybe a selfish-type player, a guy who was not going to be a team leader, was going to struggle in the locker room at times. And sure enough, you look what's going on in Houston. Now, he's not a problem in the locker room. We don't want to label somebody unfairly, but he definitely is clashed with his coaches. He is not viewed as the leader of that offense or that football team, and he's not a very good quarterback. And so it looks now like, as shocked as everybody was that he got away from Denver, it's possible that one of the people who was the happiest about it was the general manager of the Denver Broncos, and that was John Elway. Nobody's pretending that Elway saw Trevor Siemian coming, that he thought that he'd claim the starting job, that he knew how it would play out afterwards. We're not sure how they feel about Paxton Lynch right now, because, you know, you would think at this point he'd be ready to take over from Siemian, who's struggling, and they're not giving him the position. But it seems pretty clear that they had real doubts about Brock Osweiler, which are now coming to fruition.
And what have you heard about the decision process for the Houston front office, whether it was Bob McNair maybe being a little more involved than it would be ideal, or Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien teaming to make that decision? Hub, I thought I read a report in the offseason, and I'm not sure about this. Maybe you'll know, and if you don't, it's fine. I thought I read that Bill O'Brien had never met Brock Osweiler in person before the signing. Am I making that up? And what can you tell us more about the dynamic of how that decision was made?
Well, I'm going to assume you're not making it up.
I don't think I am, but it sounds crazy.
Yeah, I'm like something you read somewhere. Yeah, I don't know, to be honest with you. I didn't follow that particular part of it all that closely. I have dug in a little bit to the whole McNair-Smith issue. Bob McNair is one of the best owners in the NFL. And my understanding is that he encouraged the move. He was certainly a supporter of the move, but he also knows well enough to know that he's hired good football people and that he shouldn't be telling him what to do. So I think that McNair, may have helped push it along, but there's no way that Rick Smith can get divorced from this. Now, I don't know where Bill O'Brien fits in the equation, to be honest with you, but I'd be pretty surprised if O'Brien, who's known as a developer of quarterbacks, didn't like the idea as well.
All right. Now, all that being said, Houston will head to Indianapolis Sunday, and Tennessee will host Denver. Who is going to win the tallest midget contest? Who do you like in the AFC South with three left to play in a three-way tie?
You know, I'm apparently in the minority here because everybody's jumping on the Tennessee bandwagon, but Tennessee's already lost twice to Indianapolis, and I believe they've lost to Houston, you've got Indianapolis trying to even up the series with Houston this weekend. They're all mediocre football teams. I think Tennessee will probably be the best team next year. But right now, off what I saw Monday night, I doubted Indianapolis before, and somehow they get there. I think they win Sunday, and you've got to assume that they're going to find a way to claim the division. I think it could be at 8-8. I don't think it'll be at 7-9. None of these teams are going to get to 10. Maybe one of them can get to 9. But right now, I think Indy probably has as good or better chance of anybody because they've got that tiebreaker over the Titans.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, too. And at the end of the day, if all things are pretty much equal, you probably tend to side with the quarterback. And that's still Andrew Luck's kind of billing, if you will. So Indy still has to go to Oakland and to Minnesota. So those are not going to be easy outs. The Titans still have to go to Kansas City after Denver comes to town this week. So a lot to be decided in the AFC South. Hub, just a couple more minutes. A couple more Way We Hear It stories, too, in the NFC North that I want to get to quickly. Pro Football Weekly has been able to confirm a Chicago Tribune report about bickering between John Fox and Vic Fangio. Do you think – you wrote a column yesterday saying the Bears absolutely cannot afford to lose Vic Fangio. If this – not if, we know it's true. If it does eventually lead to a divorce, would the Bears be insane to consider keeping Vic Fangio and letting John Fox go? Would the McCaskies ever let that happen with 2 years left on Fox's deal? Do you think that will be part of the thinking if all this does materialize the way we think it might?
Let me take a step and a half backward here, because I'm ready for all of our friends who will listen and start emailing us. Yes, Hub is aware that DaQuell Jackson was just suspended for the last four games of the season. And he probably is one of the Colts' better defensive players. I just don't think that defense is good enough anyway, that I'm not sure the loss of Jackson changes their fortunes for the remainder of the season. To the report coming out of Chicago, again, just, and this is probably just semantics, I can't say that we've confirmed that there are problems between Fox and Fangio. I can say that we have multiple sources who are telling us that there are issues between Fox and Fangio, and that's important.
When it was originally reported
by Mike Mulligan in the Tribune, you know, a lot of people jumped on him, and then of course Fox and Fangio completely denied it, said it was a bad story. If you listen to the Fox and Fangio denials, I thought they confirmed it with their denials, because there was nothing they could do but say we don't have an issue with 4 weeks left in the season. But then we listened to what they said, seemed pretty clear to me. What we don't know is whether it is John Fox who has a big issue with Vic Fangio, whether it's Fangio has an issue with Fox, whether it's mutual, or again, this could be leaking out from some other sources with an axe to grind. The answer to your question is, if I'm Ryan Pace and I am forced into a choice of choosing between John Fox and Vic Fangio, I fire Fox and I give Fangio the head coaching job. Because what I am hearing from a couple pretty good sources is it may even be that it's not that Vic Fangio is that upset with John Fox. It's that he's 58 years old. He wants to be a head coach. He's never really had an opportunity. He got an interview with the 49ers when those boobs gave the job to Jim Tomsula. And other than that, he hasn't, you know, been seriously considered. I think he's the next Bruce Arians. I mean, this guy to me is one of the two or three best defensive coordinators in football. And he's great with the players, great with the media. I think he'd make an outstanding head coach. So what's really going to be interesting from a Bears perspective here, while this all plays out, is Ryan Pace is supposed to have complete control of football operations. John Fox does have control of his coaching staff, but Vic Fangio's under contract for one more year. And so even with control of his coaching staff, if Ryan Pace has control of football operations, Fox can't just fire Fangio without Pace buying in. And so if it lands in the GM's lap, we're going to find out whether or not Ryan Pace has complete control of this football team or not, because you'd have to be crazy to let Fangio get away. You know, the other issue is that John Fox, while he has coached both, is primarily a 4-3 defensive coach. They've now spent 2 years bringing in personnel to play a 3-4. You tell me who's the better 3-4 defensive coordinator in the NFL than Fix. Who would you even mention in the same sentence with Fangio? Probably Wade Phillips. Maybe Dom Capers. I don't know that Capers is as good as Fangio. You know, used to be Dick LeBeau. There is nobody else you're going to want to have. So it's going to be really intriguing to see how this one plays out.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, they've obviously acquired some pretty good pieces, some guys that look like future building blocks, and Eddie Goldman, and certainly if Leonard Floyd can stay healthy, it's trending in the right direction. So you risk throwing a lot of things up in the air if Fangio gets away, and I think that really would be a worst-case scenario for the Bears. Hub, just quickly, it's such a great primetime slate. I'm not going to bother with most of the Sunday afternoon action, but what are your thoughts on the Cowboys going to the Giants? You talked about the Giants needing to overcome Jason Pierre-Paul. Jason Pierre-Paul's loss, of course, and while the rest of the newcomers have been great, it's ironically been Pierre-Paul and Landon Collins that have catalyzed that thing as much as anyone. Are the Cowboys just kind of due for a slip-up? We know how hard it is to beat an opponent, a division opponent, twice in a year, and especially with Dallas as hot as they are.
Well, I think it's a little more than that. They're not just due for a slip-up. They're a good football team. I think the issue with Dallas is that you can – I'm sorry. I have not bought that defense yet. And I think that, you know, again, we talk about awards. If Rod Marinelli's not the assistant coach of the year, I don't know who should be. But the Giants have got the horses to attack that defense. If they don't forget about Odell Beckham for half a football game – if they spread the ball around, that's what you've got to do with that Cowboy defense, is you spread them out, and then you make them win one-on-one battles. Because one-on-one, other than Sean Lee, they don't have a lot of great football players. The Giants are also the only team that's beat them this year. I know it was the first week of the season. But I'm sure that McAdoo and Spagnuolo have an idea of how they want to attack him. And you saw a week ago Thursday night, I mean, the Vikings had him beat, should beat him. I know the Cowboys shot themselves in the foot a couple times and got away with it, but they did enough to slow that running game. I don't think Dak Prescott's going to beat you through the air. So it's a great matchup. The Cowboys probably are favored. I don't look at point spreads. They should be favored. You know, I'm not expecting them to lose, but I certainly wouldn't be shocked if the Giants pulled off that upset.
It's going to be a fun one to watch for sure. And just on the way out, Hub, let's just quickly talk about Baltimore going to New England. And I guess we can throw in a bigger AFC North angle on the thing, because I think we both believe that regardless of what happens Monday night in Foxborough, that AFC North division is likely to be decided 1 week later when the Ravens battle the Steelers. But all that being said, are you buying the offensive improvements that the Ravens finally discovered with Joe Flacco airing it out last week? And just thrashing the Dolphins, who came in as one of the hottest teams in the league? And is there anything that worries you about the Patriots, maybe aside from the loss of Rob Gronkowski?
Well, Arthur, let me say first that I certainly hope the AFC North is decided on Christmas Day when Baltimore goes to Pittsburgh, because your mother is more than a little pissed that I'll be leaving Christmas Eve to do the national radio broadcast of that game and won't be home till the day after Christmas. So Shapes Up is a good one. It's almost certain that that will decide that division. I'm surprised at the number of people who are picking Baltimore in this game. I mean, we know that no team has had a better handle on Tom Brady and the Patriots than the Ravens.
Right.
In fact, if you go back and look since Joe Flacco got to Baltimore, Joe Flacco actually has better numbers and a better quarterback rating in head-to-head matchups than Tom Brady does. He's the only quarterback in the league with that. Now, a lot of that, though, is about the Ravens' defense and the way they've been able to match up with the Patriots. This is a new defense. It's a good defense, but it's more of a no-name defense. I think that they also have enough problems on offense. I know they exploded on Miami last week, but I think it was just something they were due for. I'm not sure they have found something that they're going to carry forward every week now. You just don't go into New England and beat the Patriots. So I think they'll go in and give them a game. It should be a good one to watch, but I'd be very surprised if Belichick and McDaniel and Patricia and Brady don't find a way.
And I lied. I do have one more question for you, and it's kind of just a random one that was on the top of my mind, but it does kind of tie into what we've been talking about, and I promise I'm going to let you go. Hub, is the head coaching carousel this offseason going to be a lot slower than usual? I guess I'm thinking about some of the hot Lions coordinators. I know we've talked about a couple of other potential names and a couple of other potential vacancies, but can you come up with maybe more than two or three? I mean, I assume Jacksonville. Is there any other guarantee? I mean, I guess the Rams and the Chargers are the two other that are would be sort of up in the air, but that would be a drastic decrease from what we've seen relative to the number of changes in recent years, right?
Yeah, it does seem like it's going to be pretty slow, and I guess that's good news for a lot of folks. Gus Bradley, sadly, is clearly dead man walking. I think Rex Ryan could be in trouble in Buffalo. Mike McCoy, they've got to take a look in San Diego, although he's done some good things. He did some bad things early in the year, or at least the team did, that the head coach is responsible for. There are some who believe that John Fox should be in trouble in Chicago. I don't think he is. Of course, Jeff Fisher just got the two-year extension, but I'm told that there are outs in that contract, that the Rams could get out of it pretty cheaply. But what's the point in announcing it now and then changing your mind in 4 or 5 weeks? There are some who've tried to identify Bruce Arians, which would be insane. The guy's been the coach of the year twice in the last 4 years, but right. Some have suggested maybe with his repeated health issues. We always get a few surprises. So there's going to probably be at least 4 or 5, but the only one that seems certain right now is Jacksonville. You're absolutely right. It's unusual at this point in the year to have so few coaches so precariously on the bubble.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, I guess that overall is a good thing, because we don't like it when that's what dominates our jobs, is talking about guys being out of work and so on and so forth. Keep an eye, I suppose, in Cincinnati and with the Jets as well, but who knows what will happen there. So, Hub, great stuff. I hope I didn't keep you 20 minutes longer than you were expected. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow morning when we get all the grandkids on Santa Claus's lap and have a breakfast at Shaw Media. That should be fun.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'm actually in the parking lot at Hallis Hall waiting to go in and take some grief for telling the truth about John Fox. So we'll see what happens next.
All right, have fun with that. I hope you get in there on time. That is Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly.
And one more thank you to Hub for taking time out of his busy schedule to join the podcast this week. And a reminder, as I do every week before we go, if you have not subscribed to the Pro Football Weekly podcast, please do so by heading over to iTunes and subscribing to PFW. While you're there, we'd love it if you left us a rating and offer some feedback. Let us know how we can make this podcast more enjoyable for you to listen to. In addition to that, I just want to say thank you to our listeners for being with us again this week. I hope you enjoy what really looks to be an awesome schedule of games in Week 14, the playoff picture starting to crystallize, and we should have a lot more clarity on what is going on in the playoff chase next week when we're back again, same time, same place, for the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Thank you again, and have a great weekend.